Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight on Your Legal Rights, we're talking bankruptcy, we're talking debtors' rights and creditors' rights, and what this all means for you, your rights, and what these tools can do for you, or perhaps do to you, and how it all works. Best of all, my guest offers a two-minute debtor's solution. So whether you're looking for help or just adding to your knowledge base, you've come to the right place. You've fallen behind in your car payments. What can you do? You've fallen behind in your credit card payments. What can you do? You've fallen behind in your mortgage payments. What can you do? Tonight we're here to talk about bankruptcy and about debtors' rights, about credit and credit reports, and perhaps more importantly, we're here to answer your questions. And as is becoming our practice when discussing bankruptcy and debtors' rights, call us for a two-minute airtime solution. And as always, there's much to discuss. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Once again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And bear in mind that our attorney guest cannot provide you precise legal advice in your case, sight unseen. However, we're happy to pass along the legal principles to assist you in your decision-making. Their legal guidance mightn't be that of their firms or their employers or clients, but our guests, as always, are here to help. And our phone number again, 415-841-4134. If you are outside the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255, where, as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about your credit report. You want to talk about bankruptcy. You want to talk about debtors' rights. You don't have to be where we are, right, where we are in our conversation. And joining us tonight is Leon Bayer from the Los Angeles firm of Bayer, Wishman, and Liotta. Leon is a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, and a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. Mr. Bayer is co-author of The New Bankruptcy, Will It Work for You?, published by Nolo Press. Mr. Bayer has been practicing bankruptcy since 1979, and without further ado, Leon, welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I just love being here and visiting with you and talking to the audience. It's great.
You know, it's been 6 months or so since we last chatted about bankruptcy. Are there any changes afoot?
No. There really aren't. It's just the everyday application of people's legal rights. And the show is appropriately named because the bankruptcy laws have incredible legal rights for consumers. And a lot of times people think, woe is me. I don't have any way to solve my problem. If it's a financial problem, talking to a bankruptcy lawyer is a pretty good idea. Most bankruptcy lawyers are going to talk to you for free, no charge for a consultation. They'll give you the real stuff you need to know about, and you're going to be amazed at the strength and power of the legal rights that you actually have between you and the creditors that want your money.
You know, the other thing that strikes me with what you're just saying, talking to a bankruptcy lawyer is like talking to a surgeon. You may not want to go through the operation. Maybe you do. But it really would be a great idea to know what your options are before making those decisions and really have a game plan as to where it takes you if you go in one direction or another.
Well, and not as bad as surgery at all, because you're not going to need any anesthesia to talk to a bankruptcy lawyer.
And most bankruptcy lawyers won't even charge you.
You'll probably come away from the conversation with the lawyer feeling a whole lot better than you did when before you walked in.
You know, I see we do have a call coming in, but before we get to it, I do want to ask you about one thing. I opened by asking if there's anything new, but something struck me that is new. And that is, yesterday, it was announced pretty widely that the president is working on an initiative to take the take medical debt and make it so it won't appear on your credit report. Do you think that's going to actually happen? And what kind of tools do they have to make that happen?
I think it will happen because it already is the practice in the industry. And from the Federal Consumer Credit Bureau regulations, that medical debts that have been resolved within 1 year get dropped off of a credit report. So that's already the rule. And so it seems like there is likely to be an expansion of that. And that will help some people improve their credit almost overnight if they have some outstanding medical bills that have been just lingering on like an old illness, a medical bill.
You know, nobody plans to not pay their medical bills. Nobody reaches out and decides, you know, I'm going to skip making this insurance payment because if I get sick, it's not going to appear in my credit report. I would think that this is one of those areas where this could be a really good thing.
You know, it's whether it's on a credit report or not, if there's an outstanding debt of any great size, the creditor is going to be taking action. There could be a lawsuit against you. Whether it appears on your credit report or not doesn't make you immune from the collection of an obligation. And if it goes into court, a lawsuit, even though it's for a medical debt, that lawsuit's still going to appear on your credit. If they get a court judgment against you, that judgment is going to appear on your credit. And when a creditor gets a court judgment against somebody, it gives them a big bushel basket of legal remedies that they have to enforce payment of the judgment. They can garnish your wages. They can record liens against your home. They can put a levy on your bank account. They got some powerful tools there. So whether it's on your credit report or not, you can't slough it off. You can't ignore it. It's got to be dealt with.
Let me turn it over to Jose from San Jose. Jose, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. I have one question. If I am in bankruptcy and then, you know, I settle everything and, you know, make my payment, how long does it take to get the actual bankruptcy off my credit report? When does it fall off? Is it 3 years, 10 years, 20 years? When does that fall off where I can say I've never been in bankruptcy? They asked me.
Well, Jose in San Jose, I can answer your question. In the first place, if they ask, have you ever been in bankruptcy, there's only one truthful answer. Either you have been or you haven't. And it doesn't matter how long ago. Let's say you're running for Congress or Senate or something. You're running for president. They say, have you ever been in bankruptcy? Well, it might have been 30 years ago, but it's relevant. As far as your credit report goes, a Chapter 7 bankruptcy is going to stay on your credit for 10 years.
Okay.
And the bankruptcy from 10 years from the date the bankruptcy case was filed. So it's going to be there a long time, but it's not a roadblock to getting new credit. You're going to find that credit is very much available after a bankruptcy, especially after the bankruptcy has been aged maybe a couple years. The things that will help you establish new credit are if you have personal financial stability. That means you've been at the same job for a long time. It means you make enough money to cover your rent and your living expenses, and you're not always in the hole every month. It means you have a permanent residence of several years duration or longer, so that you're not always moving around. So, you know, creditors don't want to have to worry about not being able to find you if you owe them money. There's another kind of bankruptcy I'm sure we're going to get into at some point in this hour. We always do. which is called Chapter 13 bankruptcy. Chapter 13 is a bankruptcy case where you are making some sort of payment to creditors. Doesn't have to pay them in full in every case. But it's a restructuring, a reorganization of your financial obligations. You're going to be in a Chapter 13 probably for somewhere between 3 years to a maximum of 5 years. And the bankruptcy is going to be reported on your credit report for 7 years. That's different than the ordinary kind of bankruptcy, Chapter 7, where you're going to have it on for 10 years. You got a follow-up question, Jose?
Jose got cut off, but while Jose was on the line, we have another caller that called in and sent in a question without necessarily wanting to be on the air.
Oh, someone who's shy?
We get those in certain areas of law. We're starting to get them in bankruptcy as people are a little self-conscious about their debts. We get a lot of it in family law where people don't want their significant other to hear them on the radio asking questions about how to proceed with their case.
Well, that's because you have a very smart audience.
I could imagine there's certain areas where you don't necessarily want the other side to be hearing you. It would make some sense. You know, one person asked about getting a traffic ticket that got sent to collection from the court because they didn't do anything about it, and ultimately the driver's license was suspended. I don't believe they're currently doing that practice, but they were until recently. And this person asks whether filing bankruptcy will reinstate his or her license.
Okay. That's a pretty common question. And I get that question a lot from my own clients. Basically, they want to know if, hey, Leon, I'm filing this bankruptcy. Can I put my parking tickets on there? Can I put my traffic tickets? No. I mean, we can list them as part of your schedule of debts, but the bankruptcy discharge, eliminating your legal liability to pay a debt, does not extend to government fines and penalties such as tickets. So you got to pay your tickets. Bankruptcy is not going to stall or delay the enforcement of action against you to collect on a ticket. And if it involves a forfeiture of your license, it's not going to have any effect on that either. So pay your tickets. Maybe you don't have to pay MasterCard or B of A, but you got to pay your tickets.
Or you could go the other extreme. I won't mention who it was, but a very well-known attorney in San Francisco actually in an interview described his practice of buying really old kind of junker cars that weren't worth anything, never left anything of value in the car ever, and would simply let the tickets stack up. And at some point, the car would get impounded. If he wanted it back, he'd buy it out of impound for pennies on the dollar. If he didn't want it back, never register it. I don't recommend that practice, but again,
I've done this program, you know, a couple times a year for maybe a couple decades. And it seems like in every program, we do get a question like, hey, I've got a car, it's junked, but I still owe money on it. And the finance company won't come pick up the car. I just want to get it off my property. What do I do? Well, the implication there is do the same thing that lawyer was doing. Just let the car get impounded and your problem is solved. The car will be towed away and it's not going to be your problem anymore.
Another caller writes in and says, my job overpaid me. And they then sold the business. Do I have to pay them back? And if I do, who?
Well, I wish my job would overpay me, but, you know, it's my law firm. So the pay comes out of my pocket anyway. The money you owe to your job still belongs to somebody. It either belongs to the old owner or the new owners. When the business was sold, the sale of the assets of the business may have included all assets of the business. That includes money from everybody that owes money to the business. So the overpayment you received probably belongs to the new owners of the business. If the sale of the business did not include that right, then you still owe the overpayment to the old owner. You owe it to somebody. It doesn't go away. That one was kind of easy.
I would think so. I mean, it's not too often that you're walking down the street and you see money. But even that belongs to somebody.
Well, I found a nickel on the sidewalk yesterday morning across the street from my office, and I put it in my pocket. So I did find money.
I have a client who once found $2,000 or thereabouts. It's been some years. A money order in that amount, found it that where someone had dropped it. All the copies were there. It was totally intact. Nothing was filled out. And then he came and repaid me and paid my retainer with it and did not tell me that he had found the money order. When it came back with the payment stopped, I had a conversation with him about appropriating lost property, how that's a crime in California, and how I had to withdraw from his case because he basically made me a witness to a crime.
Jeff, as I recall, and I'm sure your listeners know, your practice area of law is criminal law. So, you know, how surprised should you have been?
Most people think finders keepers. Most everything you will lay your eyes on at any time of day or night belongs to somebody.
Well, that's right. And I do remember something from 50 years ago when I was in law school about the laws of treasure trove. When you find buried treasure on land that belongs to somebody else, who does the treasure belong to? There's a very large body of law dealing with this issue. So that was kind of a fun question.
So one of the questions that people have been writing about periodically, I sometimes see this, the calls I get 5 minutes after one of our shows are over, or the emails, I get some very specific questions about Chapter 13. And you just described Chapter 13 as a reorganization. Tell us a little bit about what Chapter 13 is, because I've got a couple of follow-up questions that people have written in.
Okay. So Chapter 13 is one of the very powerful debt relief remedies that's available under the bankruptcy code. And the idea is you have a bundle of debts. You have maybe some debts that are secured, like the money you owe on your car, your mortgage loan on your house. And you may also have a lot of debts from, say, credit cards, maybe some medical bills that are what we call unsecured. There's no collateral for them. In a Chapter 13 case, there are specific rules that describe how you must handle certain kinds of debts. So debts that are secured, like your mortgage or your automobile loan, have to be paid. There is a little bit of wiggle room. You don't always have to pay those in full if the value of the collateral, like if the automobile is an old car and it's not worth anymore, the amount that you still owe on it. It is sometimes possible for us to cram down the balance that you owe on that car and make it smaller. And then that smaller amount is what you pay. In terms of general debts like credit cards, the law looks to two things: your income and your necessary living expenses. So the court is going to look at all the income you have in your household, you, your significant other, if you're shacked up with somebody, or your spouse. And then the court is going to allow you to deduct from your income necessary living expenses. And there's a lot of guidance in the law as to what necessary living expenses are. the court gives a lot of deference to the IRS rules that determine how much money you get to keep if the IRS is really hot and heavy after you. The IRS has certain allowance figures of what you should be paying in terms of rent and food and utilities. And there's also a lot of that is taken from Census Department data of what the average person in your state, and sometimes even in the county where you live, is spending on things like housing and utilities. But at the end of the day, there's some amount of money that you're going to pay to creditors, and you're going to be paying them usually in a span of time spread out over 3 years or not longer than 5 years. Most Chapter 13 cases don't pay back all the debt you owe. In most cases under a Chapter 13, you pay some of it. And at the end, if you've kept up your part of the bargain, when the case is all finished and you've made all the payments required of you, and normally you're making a monthly payment every month to the bankruptcy court trustee, the trustee takes those monies and divides them up and pays them out according to the terms of the court order approving your reorganization plan. And then, so at the end of the day, if you've kept up your side of the bargain, you've made all the payments called for, then you get a discharge of the remaining unpaid balance that you owe on unsecured debts like credit cards and medical bills and personal loans.
So I've got lots of follow-ups. I've just had somebody text from outside the Bay Area rather than a call. Folks, you can call. You can talk on the radio. You can have us read your question for you as if you wish. One listener calls in and asks, does filing Chapter 13 in California protect a debtor from losing their property? Are property owners protected from losing their homes after filing Chapter 13? And in particular, he expresses what he's heard about Florida, where Florida recognizes that they have some kind of a protection. But I don't know if that's part of the bankruptcy scheme or whether that's enacted under Florida law.
Well, it's both, because bankruptcy law looks to the state law to define interests in property, and it looks to state law to define what kinds of assets you may get to keep when you file bankruptcy. And it's a little more complicated than that, but I'll leave it with some simplicity. In California, as in every state, if you file a Chapter 13 or any kind of bankruptcy, you don't get a free house. You have to pay for your house if there's money owed on it. And most Chapter 13s are filed probably to deal with a default situation that people have on their mortgage. They've gotten behind on mortgage payments, maybe because of a divorce or an illness, a period of unemployment. Something has happened in their personal life that's caused them to miss house payments. And they may even be facing an actual foreclosure. Chapter 13 gives you a way to turn down the volume on the collection of those delinquent mortgage payments. The Chapter 13 law says that once you file your bankruptcy case, you start making your normal regular payments again. The reason why is so you don't get any further behind than you already are. And you can take those delinquent payments that's putting you into the foreclosure, maybe threatening you with the loss of your home. You take those delinquent payments and you can pay them back in smaller monthly amounts spread out over as long as 5 years. So you have up to 5 years to get the house payments caught up, and you have to keep making the normal regular ongoing payments every month so you don't go any further behind. You don't get a free house. The listener was confusing those payment procedures in Chapter 13 with the Florida state homestead exemption. California also has a homestead exemption. There is a homestead exemption in every one of the states. And that has to do with whether or not you have to pay back unsecured creditors. And the homestead exemption will say that if the amount of equity in your property is less than or equal to the homestead exemption amount, and that you really have no extra money to pay unsecured creditors, then your bankruptcy can discharge you from paying the unsecured creditors. But it's a very different concept than what is covered under a Chapter 13 payment plan.
And as we're nearing the end of the first half hour, I'm going to give you a quicker question that was called in. And that is a listener's asking if any credit cards don't require a check of your credit history.
I guess that caller must be thinking about applying for new credit, and maybe that person has some pretty bad credit and wants to get new credit issued and doesn't want the bank to look at their old past credit history. Well, you know, banks, department stores, everybody that extends credit is in business to make money. And they're very careful about who they give credit to. They look at your credit reports. There's no financial institution you can go to that doesn't care about your credit history. It's just not there. It's not out there. Even payday loans, even loan sharks. Certainly don't go to a loan shark. But if you do, they too have their criteria, you know? Because if you don't pay up, they're going to want to break your kneecaps. If you don't have legs where they can break a kneecap, I don't think they're going to loan you money. So everybody has lending criteria. Now, you can't see it, folks, because we're not on video, live video, but I just saw Jeff. Jeff and I are on live video feed, and I just saw him rolling his eyes at my answer, and I guess I understand that. But creditors will always look at your credit history. They don't just they will not blindly lend to anybody that wants to have credit from them.
At least not secured credit, not unsecured credit.
Yeah. And they're no different than you are. If somebody who's a complete stranger wants to borrow money from you, are you going to loan it to them? No. You want to know something about them. Where do they work? How do I know you? You don't just hand money to people because they ask for it.
But there might be a lender out there, occasionally we see them surface, who will say, gee, put $1,000 in the bank and we'll give you a credit card with an $800 limit so you can start to build your credit again.
Yes. Now, that is a good credit building tool if that financial institution reports to the credit reporting companies. Not all of them do, because there are certain overhead costs involved for a lender to give information on a regular basis to the credit reporting bureaus. So not all secured credit cards will help your credit. So you got to ask before you plunk down your money into the bank account with them.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, and tonight we're talking about bankruptcy, debtors' rights, credit. If it has to do with your wallet, things that go into it, things you're trying to keep from flowing out of it, we're here to talk. We're here to help. If you need help at this time of great need, my guest Leon Bayer is here to help. He'll even offer a two-minute debtor analysis, two-minute debtor solution. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And you can call us regarding any question on tonight's topic. You want to talk about bankruptcy, you want to talk about credit, you want to talk about your money, you want to talk about solution to a debtor's problems. You don't have to jump in where we are in our conversation. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So we've been talking a little bit about Chapter 13s, and a caller sent in a message, and we're getting more callers calling. I'm hoping that I could punch some live voices through in a moment, but one did write in that he recently completed a Chapter 13 paying back 100%, and that the court gave him at the end a dismissal instead of a discharge of the bankruptcy because he had had a Chapter 7 some 4 years beforehand. And I'd like to give you a chance to talk a little bit about that, the difference in a discharge as opposed to a dismissal. Yeah. Why is it important?
It's really important because the law provides that if you're going to be receiving a bankruptcy discharge, you have to be a person who's eligible to receive it. And it is currently the law that if you had a Chapter 7 case less than 4 years ago, and now you need bankruptcy relief again, and you go into a Chapter 13, you can still use the Chapter 13 to reorganize your debts, but you're not going to get a discharge if that previous Chapter 7 bankruptcy had been filed less than 4 years ago. So that individual with that problem, he's paid his debts, and he'd like to have a discharge, and I understand why. Because in the Chapter 13, whether you're eligible for a discharge or you're not, you're really not paying all your debts. He thinks he did. Or she thinks she did, but probably not, because the court administers your bankruptcy payments to pay creditors, but doesn't collect money from you to cover ongoing interest. So one of the great advantages of a Chapter 13 is maybe you do 100% payback plan, you pay everything, but you save a bucket of money by not having to pay interest, ongoing interest while you're in the case. 5 years of interest could be a lot of money. So the individual who sent us that question is probably thinking about what happens now with all that interest that's accumulated. The accumulated interest on those debts has not gone away. In fact, even the statute of limitations for a creditor to sue and recover unpaid interest has been stopped by the filing of the bankruptcy for the duration of the case. In my experience, creditors are not going to chase you down trying to recover interest if you did not receive a discharge. But it could happen.
Let me turn it to Marissa from San Jose. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I am curious to hear I've been noticing a lot of these kind of split your payments up options. There's certain platforms or apps that specifically tailor to that, they don't, you know, do a credit check or anything like that, but, you know, you can make fairly large purchases and spread those out. I'm curious how your credit would be affected if you're not paying that debt back.
Your credit's going to be affected most likely anytime you're not paying a debt that you owe. As Jeff said at the top of the hour, it's looking like a failure to be on time or to pay medical debts might not affect your credit report, but the money is still owed. And if you go to some of those kind of companies where they're financing something for you and you don't make all your payments, I think it's going to be on your credit. You know, the one way to know for sure is pull your credit reports and see what they say. If that institution, that financial institution, is reporting that purchasing program on your credit report, then it's there. And even if it's not there, but you owe money and you stopped paying it, they can come after you. A contract is a contract.
Okay, just curious, since I've been seeing a lot more of that, and I've just wondered, like, wow, they're just letting you do this without checking your credit. So just wondering the relationship between all of this. Thank you.
The one thing to remember is what they don't do directly, they could do indirectly. The example we gave earlier was when we were talking about taking certain debts off your credit report, but if people execute on those debts and go to court and get a judgment or the like, that'll turn around and show up in your report. So if it doesn't hit you directly, it's going to hit you indirectly.
Okay. And then this type of debt would be considered the unsecured debt, correct?
I don't think so. I had some trouble hearing your full question, but it sounds like these are debts that are created to allow you to buy something. Is that correct?
Yes, that's how I've seen it, yes.
Okay, appliances, furniture. Those consumer goods are the collateral for the debt, and they can be repossessed, or the creditor may sue you for the balance due on the contract. There's an important provision in the California Civil Code that says the creditor has to make a choice. They could either repossess, in which case they get the merchandise back, but the consumer doesn't owe them any more money. Or they can sue you for the balance due on the contract, and you keep the goods. In my experience, those kinds of purchase arrangements are selling you merchandise for far more than the cash price would have been if you had gone somewhere else to buy it for cash. And they charge very high interest rates, and the sticker price of the merchandise that you buy, whether it's a washing machine or a refrigerator or sofa, whatever it is, they charge you probably double or triple what those things would have cost you if you walked into a different store and just paid cash.
Okay, great. Well, appreciate the conversation. Thanks for taking my call.
Marissa, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. And let me turn it to Bob from Richmond. Bob, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi. Thank you. And I'll take my answer up here. I recently found out that my credit score had gotten dinged by a fraudulent credit card request. Somebody had kited my credit card number, and they filed a request for credit with Capital One Bank for a card. When I finally, you know, got through to Capital One, and a really nice person, you know, explained to me this is what's happened. Then she explained to me that they're not going to do anything about it. I have to, of course, tell FICO and creditors and all that myself, and that it will probably stay on my rating for another 6 to 8 weeks or a couple of months or whatever. And I just wanted to ask if there's any way to get through that. She said, you know, she got all my information on the phone. She said, no, this isn't you, somebody.
Bob, let me jump in now, and while you're still on the phone, because maybe you'll have a follow-up question, and that is, the consumer does have protections from fraudulent credit use. That's identity theft. You do have protection, but you've got to act very quickly, and usually the law requires that you, or the rules governing this, require that you have to report it to the creditor, I think, within 30 days of the time that you see it on a statement. So what really has to be known here is, when did you learn about this? Do you know who did it? Was it somebody in your family, someone who lived with you, who stole your credit card or pulled it out of your wallet?
Can you hear me?
We do hear you.
So when did you learn about this, Bob?
This credit card is what hurt my credit.
Bob, I don't know. Can you hear us now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, the question Leon was just asking you.
I know what the question was. He asked me. The fact is, no one ever got the card. That's what I was trying to explain. The card was denied, but the inquiry and the denial affected my credit rating.
No, no, understand.
Oh. So nothing was ever purchased. There's no debt, but your
That's
credit
right.
got dinged because they tried to apply for credit under your name,
That's
and
right.
the credit world has decided that it looks like you
because
were applying
it was denied,
more
was,
credit than what you could afford to pay back.
Less credit worthy, yeah.
Okay. What you should do is dispute that item on each credit report where it appears. There are three major credit reporting bureaus, and you should get your credit reports and dispute that, saying, this wasn't me, I didn't do it, and there's a chance that that will then drop off.
Yeah, thank you. That's what they told me. I was just, it's going to take like 6 to 8 weeks or maybe a couple months.
That's right.
I'll do that. They'll take the time to do all that. But it seems
yeah.
like if it was clearly a fraudulent thing, then Capital One, who, you know, registered this denial, should have some responsibility to tell the credit bureaus. But that's okay. I'll trudge along. Thank you very much.
Bob, see, Capital One or whoever did it, whoever put that on your report, they don't know what happened. You might have been
now.
The one that did it, or it may have been somebody else who was doing an identity theft against you. They don't know. So what you do is you're going
to
just have to go through the trouble and the hassle of disputing it on your credit report. And the creditor who put it there on your report then has, I think, 2 weeks or something to respond with evidence to show that to show why they think it was valid or to remove it.
Okay.
It's just a process you're going to have to go through. There's just no substitute for it.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob. You know, and one of the things Bob brings out with this call is sometimes you could talk to customer service at any credit card and any credit card issuer or the like, and they'll say, yeah, it sounds like somebody else wrote in, or maybe they'll even go so far as to say, sure, someone else applied. It doesn't appear it was you. But that's not the same thing as actually when you dispute it and make them do the investigation to determine it's a different group of folks. That conversation alone may not be all that effective.
I agree with that, Jeff. And, you know, unfortunately, it just puts a burden on people to get their credit reports on a regular basis or subscribe to a service for which there is some cost out of your own pocket. But
you could even use a free one
that lets you know if something derogatory hits your credit report.
You could even have free services. The bureaus themselves will offer one often that's them alone. You could go to some place like Credit Karma, which has two of the three big bureaus, and you could check it periodically. It's updated daily. I make it part of my routine every week. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW San Francisco Bay Area. We're talking about bankruptcy, credit reporting, debtors' rights. You have a few minutes if you still wish to call in. Our number is 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, toll free at 866-798-8255. You can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. You don't have to jump into the same moment we may be in our conversation. And after all, my guest tonight, Leon Bayer, is a tremendous resource in this area, is here to help. Give us a call while you still can. And a caller followed up with our previous conversation about Chapter 13 and says, hey, my Chapter 13's been dismissed. How much time do I have to take care of my mortgage arrears?
Wow. I can only offer some guidance. I can't really give a specific answer because I don't know where that listener is in terms of actions being taken by the mortgage company. Has the mortgage company already put him into foreclosure? If they've already put him into foreclosure, what stage is the foreclosure at? Foreclosure is a fairly lengthy process. It takes almost 4 months, a little bit shy of 4 months from start to finish, from the time they actually legally start the foreclosure going to the time when they can have an auction sale and somebody with a big hammer hits the mallet and says, this house is sold. So information is key. I suggest if that listener is listening, call your mortgage company in the morning and find out what the status of things is. If it's in foreclosure, you got to ask them what date did the foreclosure start. And then you better talk to bankruptcy lawyer, because bankruptcy lawyers know about this stuff. They know what the deadlines are and the time periods. You got to be very proactive, because people sometimes do lose their house just out of ignorance because they're not watching or asking the right questions of the right people.
I've got one interesting question that looks at where a lot of these things come together. It's got bankruptcy issues, small claims issues, landlord-tenant issues.
Oh, no.
And I'm trying to make sense out of this question, so I'll break it down a little bit.
If you can't make sense out of it, how am I supposed to even answer it?
You're supposed to rub those cents together and cough up some dollars.
Uh-oh.
This person says he filed a small claims suit against a former tenant. And the court date's coming up. He receives a request to postpone the trial because the former tenant says, hey, yeah, I'm going to be out of town, but, you know, first and foremost, I want to take some time to finish my bankruptcy filing.
Okay.
So this person has some related questions. Does he have to accept the request of the tenant? How does he respond? Whether he says no or whether he...
Okay. So these are questions, I gather, these are questions being asked by the landlord who wants to collect the back rent and has gone to court to collect it.
Exactly.
And the defendant, the former tenant, is trying to buy some time saying, hey, you know, I need to postpone this because I'm going to file bankruptcy. People say that all the time when they talk to bill collectors or the creditors, you know, back off, leave me alone, or I'm going to just file bankruptcy. I can tell you they don't care.
How can he find out for sure if he's even in bankruptcy proceedings?
If he's in a bankruptcy proceeding and he has listed this debt, the bankruptcy court clerk will send a notice to the landlord and to all the creditors that have been listed. When you file a bankruptcy, you have a legal duty to list all your debts, all your creditors with a correct address. And you are required not only to use what you think is a good address, but you're supposed to use the address that has been on any billing or correspondence from that creditor within the last previous 30 days. So I think given the tone of the defendant's question, I need to finish my bankruptcy. I'm thinking that what they really mean is they need to get their bankruptcy filed in the court system, and they haven't got it quite to that point. In which case, if that is the situation, I would tell the landlord, just go right ahead with the lawsuit. I wouldn't agree to any continuance, because sometimes people don't ever follow through with the bankruptcy that they're telling you that you're going to file.
In the end, does it make any difference whether the trial takes place before the bankruptcy is finalized?
In the end, it probably makes no difference in that particular case. And most debts for non-payment of rent never get collected anyway. So, you know, I kind of feel sorry for the landlord in this case, because the landlord has spent money for court filing fees and service of process. And so the average plaintiff suing someone in small claims court is going to be out a couple $100 probably. And if it's a debt that you're trying to collect for delinquent rent, you're probably never going to see it. When somebody defaults on their rent. You know, they're really scraping the bottom of the bucket there. That's really about the last thing people fail to pay. And if somebody couldn't finish paying their rent, chances are it's just going to be uncollectible. The landlord will never catch up with them and find any money that can be taken to satisfy the debt.
Let me turn over to Cindy from Alameda. Cindy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Can you tell me, I should have a stellar credit rating for all measures. I'm a previous homeowner. I've never defaulted on anything. I'm totally up to date with all my debt. I actually have no debt. I've always paid my bills on time. Anyway, where would I go to figure out why do I have a lower credit rating? It's like 650 or something. It should be much higher than that. So where would I go to start to figure out why and how to fix it?
Okay, well, your first step was to call this program, because I'll shed some light on that.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I could help you with this a little bit.
Okay.
Is your house paid off?
I actually sold off my portion in the course of a divorce. So my ex now owns the home in entirety.
Ah,
he gave me
okay.
a sum of money to essentially pay me out of
okay.
the house.
All right. I think I can tell you why your credit score is 650 and not a lot higher. It's because you have no current financial obligations that are getting reported on a regular basis. So
I have a credit card. I have a monthly credit card thing, but I pay it off in full every month, and same with all my other bills. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. Now, okay. You should be getting good credit reputation from paying the credit card in full every month. You should be getting great credit score from that.
But I'm not.
You know, one place you,
let me just ask you, what's the average monthly amount that you're charging on that credit card?
Probably about $1,500.
Well, that's a good sum. What bank is it?
Citibank.
Well, that's a big institution, and I know Citibank religiously reports on credit reports. I'm just wondering if there's something. Have you looked at your actual credit report? Not the score, but actually looked at the report to see maybe if there's something on there that's dinging you?
Now, that I am guilty of. I haven't checked any
okay.
credit reports in forever.
I suspect there is something on that report that's gone unnoticed, and it's a good thing you called your legal rights this evening. Because tomorrow you're going to get your credit reports and you're going to read through them and you're going to see what's on there that's, you know, what's coming out of those reports to poke you. Something's on there.
Okay.
Does your name still show up on the loan on the property you quit claimed over to your ex?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Does your name still appear on that loan on the property that you sold back to your ex?
I don't think so. I mean, we did all the paperwork through lawyers and everything, and
yeah.
everything was on the up and up. He essentially bought me out of the house.
Okay. And when he did that, he may have refinanced the house, paid off the then existing mortgage loan, so there's no longer a mortgage with your name attached. So I'll go back to what I said before. It sounds like you've got something on that report. I think I can hit the nail on the head. I'm guessing there's some kind of a debt that was a joint debt, maybe some joint credit or something, and your ex didn't take very good care of paying it when he was supposed to, and that's okay. what's biting you.
Okay.
You could
so
go tonight.
How would I go about
You could go
How would
tonight.
I go about checking that out, though.
You could go tonight to Credit Karma and pull your credit reports. They will do it for free. You'll get two of the three bureaus. You
okay,
can click on and analyze.
Jeff, I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to give the listener a website where she can get all three bureaus for free.
Once a year.
And it's annualcreditreport.com.
Okay.
One word, annual credit report. It's all one word, .com. You can, once a year, you'll get access to all three of the major credit reports. And go through those credit reports carefully, and I think you'll spot something. And I just have a feeling it's a debt that maybe was incurred under the name of your ex and yourself, and your ex was supposed to take care of it and probably didn't take care of it very well.
Now, those credit reports, the place that you just referred me to, would there be an indication that it would be under my ex's name as well? Like, would I be able to spot such a thing that you're naming?
Well, I don't know. I think so. I don't know, but if you see something on there that you don't recognize as having been charged by you, it's a pretty good bet that it was from your ex.
Okay.
The reason I suggested going with a place like Credit Karma, they won't be as comprehensive in the sense of having all three reporting agencies, and it may not be quite as comprehensive as a report. But it does have analysis where you can click on it and it'll show you if something's what your strengths are, what's good, what's bad, and you could go from there. And I think the two ideas about going to some place like Credit Karma or going to the annual credit report and taking your full report, those could be done together. I would do both.
That's a great idea.
You do get a lot of analysis that way, and someone will tell you, this is what's lacking. This is good. This is excellent. This needs work. And you could really get a sense of how to come back.
Yeah. And Cindy, if you have any follow-up questions, I'll probably be back here on the program again in about 6 months. And you can call back then.
We'll do sooner than that.
And please, I came in late in the program, and your name is?
My name is Leon Bayer, B-A-Y-E-R.
Okay. And one last question, if I may, if it's okay. When I check these credit reports, one or both of them, is there an indication, like, would I just contact the institution to figure it out, to try to resolve it, or
you can do it
once I see something?
You can do it by disputing individually with the creditor. You can do it through the bureau. The online reports, like I keep mentioning Credit Karma because that's the one that I've used, but there's others. They will often have a facility, an interface for you to dispute it right then and there through them, and they'll pass it along. I hate to cut you short, but we are out of time. But it's been a pleasure. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco, and tonight we've been discussing bankruptcy, debtors' rights, creditors. Our guest tonight is Leon Bayer from the Los Angeles firm of Bayer, Wishman, and Liotta. Leon is a certified specialist in the area of bankruptcy law by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California and a longtime supporter. We return next week at Your Legal Rights where, as always, we take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Leon Bayer, for joining us yet again. And a big thanks to all of you for listening. At the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.